baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and you fill in the blank. Summer and Chevy go together like road trips and sunshine. Check out the full line of Chevy SUVs and trucks at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers today. Chevy, drive Chicago.
In his memoir, Frank, former Congressman Barney Frank writes that at age 14, he realized he was different in a couple of ways from the other guys. He liked the idea of public service, that was one. The other was, he liked the idea of other guys. And who would have thought that 60 years later, he would retire from public life as a leader in government and a trailblazer for gay rights. Congressman Barney Frank, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe I'm a little naive, but in reading about this book and the things that everyone's talking about, I'm kind of surprised that it's so tilted toward your gay rights struggle. I mean, I think of you more as a government leader. I kind of forget that you're a gay rights leader.
Well, I appreciate that. I take that as a high compliment. And, you know, I would have preferred to talk more about just the political stuff, although you have some expectations. Actually, to my great bemusement, a gay reporter for the New York Times reviewed the book for the Times and complained that there wasn't enough sex in it, that I didn't talk about all the sexual activity I had. I think he thought he was reviewing 50 Shades of Frank.
Congressman.
But the reason I talked about it some is that there is still prejudice out there. There are still young people who are feeling intimidated and discouraged, and I wanted to give them some hope that they can overcome it.
You're talking about Frank Bruni from the New York Times, and Congressman,
yes.
I've interviewed hundreds of writers, and I've interviewed writers who don't like their reviews so much. I've never run across a writer who's so willing to call out a review as you have in this one.
Well, I would accept criticism that I was unclear, that my writing was bad, that my argument was weak, but the complaint that I didn't talk enough about the sex I was having seemed to me, frankly, surprising in the New York Times. I might have expected that in the National Enquirer.
Okay, let's get to some of the issues then. You know, when it comes to this, you write about how you told Tip O'Neill, and we've heard the story about you might have been the first Jewish speaker, you're coming out of the room and all of that stuff. But from that to the fact that you were a married member of Congress by the time you left, I mean, I can't think of any social change that has come so quickly. It's remarkable to me. It must be equally remarkable to you.
Oh, Steve, you're exactly right. And you know what? I was just saying to someone today, I kept saying, well, you know, this is happening faster than I thought, and I finally caught up. But even today, I got to tell you, I am amazed at the extent to which there has been this negative reaction in your neighboring state of Indiana. Frankly, that's again a degree of progress from our standpoint that came much quicker than I would have thought. Who would have thought that in Indiana, a culturally conservative state, Cummins Diesel would be objecting to this legislation?
I got to tell you, I missed that one because when it happened, I thought, well, he signed the bill or the law. People are going to complain about it, but it won't sort of explode the way it did in Arizona before she signed the law. I was wrong. I mean, and it's been a fast-moving change there as well.
Well, you had a lot of company being wrong. You know, obviously, I suppose, as close to an expert on this as I can be. I filed the first bill in Massachusetts on the subject 43 years ago, and I was totally surprised. But what was encouraging to me and surprising was the business community. Eli Lilly, Cummins, not just, you know, your Apple, the high-tech people, but American business, and this is what's encouraging me, is saying, I think, to people, please, we're trying to run an efficient, productive economy. We can't be bothered with hate. We can't be bothered with prejudice. Knock it off. And I think that that reaction, and then Walmart, same in Arkansas, that's going to be the end of this whole issue.
I'll tell you what, we're on the same page because that's what I wanted to ask you about. This seems to me to be sort of a cultural shift where we had religion in organizations such as that weighing in on social issues. Here is business affecting a real change.
That is absolutely right. And, you know, I guess Calvin Coolidge said it. People made fun of him, but it was very profound. The business of America is business. You know, we can have arguments over political and ideological issues, but when the overwhelming consensus of the business community, and again, this is a broad range of businesses, Salesforce and Walmart and these others, they say, listen, we are trying to produce things. We're trying to run an economy. This hatred, this bigotry, it is a confusion, it is an obstruction, and it's rare. I'll tell you what, I do think of an analogy. In the mid-60s, the Civil Rights Bill passed, in part because the business community said, look, this racism, this prejudice, this upheaval, it is costing us money. We can't afford to allow it to happen. And what I think has happened is the business community is now speaking out on the whole question of discrimination based on sexual orientation, and I think that's going to put an end to it.
That's an interesting thing, because I was thinking maybe we are at this cultural shift where business would have a greater say and it was something new. But if you look at the civil rights issue, it's really nothing new at all. It's just history repeating itself.
Yeah, it's them saying, you know what? This is now starting to get in the way of our being able to do our job. Knock it off.
All right. You mentioned my neighborhood. And this week, Congressman Schock from downstate Illinois left office. And he left, you know, amid scandal, worried about his financial dealings and all of that. I want to ask you about a couple of things you said, because you sort of, not that you made light of it, but you said, look, no straight guy spends that much time in the gym and then takes his shirt off for everyone else. You made a couple of lines like that. And we are at a different time, but it struck me when you said that, because I followed you pretty closely, and it surprised me a little bit, because in a way, I wonder if you didn't afford him the privacy that you were after in the mid-'80s.
Steve, that's a very fair question, but I made the distinction from the beginning. I think there's a right to privacy, but not to hypocrisy. And I don't know whether Aaron Schock was gay or not. Other people raised it. It did seem to me, you know, the kind of obsessive focus on his body is, it's not automatic. It's more common in gay men than straight men. But if you are a gay man and you vote to penalize other gay people, if you vote, as Aaron Schock did, for anti-gay laws, to outlaw gay marriage, etc., then the question is not privacy, but hypocrisy. And again, I don't know what his sexual orientation is, but I do believe, and when I first decided to run 40-some-odd years ago, I said, you know what, I'll be a coward, but I won't be a hypocrite. I won't tell people I'm gay, but I will never vote to mistreat other gay people this way. So that's the distinction. I think anybody has a right to privacy, but you do not have a right to live a certain way and then vote to penalize other people for doing it.
We talk a lot of business here, and when it comes to legislation and the Republicans, I think Dodd-Frank is second only to Obamacare when it comes to what the Republicans want to repeal. So, you know, a few years hence now, as you look back, are you satisfied with what that law accomplished?
I'm pretty much satisfied. Obviously, you know, if any one person does it, you do it a little differently. I think it has refuted two sets of criticism. One was, oh, you're killing the economy. Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has about tripled since we started working on that bill, and the economy has been very good. So clearly we didn't hurt the economy, or at least not in any noticeable way. And secondly, some of my leftist friends who said, oh, you didn't destroy the banks. No, I think we've seen a lot more responsible behavior and a lot of restraint. And I do believe that it is working well, but here is the issue. The Republican Party was against it overwhelmingly when we passed it in 2010, and they continue to be. And it's one of the things that people should understand. We're going to have a very serious election next year for president. Whether or not we do anything about climate change will be on the ballot, and specifically whether or not we maintain financial regulation or go back to the system we had before. Clearly, if a Republican president wins, that will mean the reversion to the old form.
You write in your book that candidate Obama might have done more to protect American homeowners when it comes to foreclosure protection when they were first writing the first TARP law.
Yeah, actually, President-elect Obama, we had this problem. People are familiar with the fact that between the end of the Hoover administration, the beginning of the Roosevelt administration, the depths of the Depression, there was a problem because nobody was in charge between November and it was then March. And in fact, that was such a serious problem that we amended the Constitution, or they did, I wasn't around then, to say that the new president took over January 20th rather than March 4th to lessen that period when nobody's in charge. But even that wasn't enough. This whole financial crisis, bad enough to have a crisis, worse to have it when you're changing presidents. And we reached a point where we had written into the bill that there should be money to help alleviate foreclosures. And Secretary Paulson, Bush's Secretary of the Treasury, promised me he would ask for that money and use it if Obama said okay, because this is now December. Obama hasn't yet taken office, but he's been elected president. I asked the Obama people to do it, and they say, I understand it, although I was disappointed, well, we're not in charge, they're in charge. We don't want to be responsible for telling them to spend money which we can't control. So as a result, neither side would budge, and money was not made available to help homeowners. And I get very frustrated. Well, the Obama people said, well, you got to understand, we only have one president at a time. And I said, yeah, well, I think you've overstated the number of presidents we have right now.
Zillow was just out with a study, and I suppose it was nationwide, but in the Chicago area, or maybe it was Illinois, a quarter of the homeowners are still underwater.
Yeah, that's probably worse there. There's been some improvement elsewhere. And look, some people made irresponsible mortgage deals, and you don't want to bail them out.
Right.
But other people made a good deal, and then because of the national economic trends, they found themselves underwater. And I do believe we should be helping. And one of the things we've done is we've gotten some agreements from some banks, some fines in the billions of dollars. That money ought to be used to try to help those people who are in trouble with their homes, not because they were irresponsible. You know, some people took out a second mortgage to buy a boat. I don't want to help them. But people who made a responsible decision and then the economic trends put them underwater, they should get help.
I want to paraphrase something you wrote. A lot of people who are angry about increased wealth going to only a handful of people also vote for the politicians who make it worse. It seems to me that in many ways the Tea Party is angry with the people they support.
No question
they
about
be.
It.
They
I understand
should be
why. Here's the deal. People see us, the Democrats, as the party of government. I'll give you an example. People say, oh, the Democrats, they're always doing these bailouts. In fact, there were five bailouts during that period of the crisis. Every one of them was started by George W. Bush. In some cases, Congress, the Democrats supported it, and others, he did it on his own. So you have people today who are angry, understandably, because the economy has been working unfairly, and white working-class guys without a lot of high-end skills are not getting a fair share. So they say, well, government should be fixing it. It must be the Democrats' fault. In fact, we Democrats have only been in power for House, Senate, and President for 4 years in the last 35. And so that does lead them to vote for people who say, ah, those Democrats are no good. And people say, you're right. Where were they when I needed economic help? So that's the frustration to me. I want to break out of that. I genuinely believe that if we were to free up money for the government to do massive infrastructure. Let's do all the highway construction we need and hire every construction worker. Let's say that any student who has a good educational background in high school can go to a good state university for $1,000 and relieve that debt burden. I'd like to reduce Medicare down to 55, which is a great thing for working people. If we could do that, I think a lot of the people who are angry would say, well, those are good programs. And so the vicious cycle is, where do you get the money? In my view, you cut military spending beyond what we are now doing. We should not have gone into Iraq. We shouldn't do that sort of thing again. I would also stop the prosecution of recreational drugs, saving all that money for the states and cities. I believe if we spent the same amount of money we're now spending wisely, we could alleviate inequality and meet the anger.
I want to ask you about the upcoming race for president, too. You know, people say Hillary Clinton's not liberal and all of that, or not liberal enough. Here's what I think. I think people are going to be so fatigued by the endless sort of attack, counterattack of all of it. I mean, she's already being attacked. She's answering, you know, not as well as she should have. I think everyone's going to be tired of that, and that's going to hurt her more than whether or not she's liberal enough. I wonder what you think of that.
No, I think that's a little bit excessive. I think there's some of that there. But, you know, the fact is that there's nothing behind the attacks. And I do believe when it comes down to what people will focus on, the important issues, including the economy. You know, she's been attacked over time. But, look, she's still by far the most popular candidate for president. So I think it's a sign that the attacks and the absence of any evidence doesn't have that big of an impact.
Former Congressman Barney Frank, how's retirement?
Very good. I don't miss stress at all.
What is it sort of that you found you've enjoyed the most?
Not flinching when the phone rings. The phone just rang and it was you to have a good conversation about serious subjects. It wasn't somebody whose Social Security check was missing or a mayor telling me they had this crisis or a secretary telling me in the cabinet that we had this bill we had to get through. So the absence of stress is nice, and I get to have these kind of conversations with you about the substantive issues I care about, but without, frankly, the responsibility for solving other people's problems.
Well, I'm smart enough to go out on a compliment, so it was very nice to meet you and talk to you today. Thank you very much, Congressman.
Thank you, Steve. I've enjoyed this.
Former Congressman Barney Frank.